Blog Talk Radio.
Dedicate our lives to this sport. We do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We attitude. We moody, and we go into that fight and to land on the line.
College Ball Show Podcast. I'm Chris, he's Marshall, and we're here to discuss, banter, debate, and just yell at each other once a week for college basketball. Okay, we do college football, we do college basketball. That's why it's called the College Ball Show. But don't forget, when this puppy's done in about a month, we're going to keep going on a weekly basis. The NBA playoffs, we'll cover that on a weekly basis, just like we do for college football, college basketball. We'll take that all the way to the NBA Finals. And then we'll have an NBA draft and, of course, an NBA free agency show as well. That'll be early July, so stay with us from March to July. Check it out on iTunes, Player FM, Stitcher, TuneIn. It's under the Rope-A-Dope Radio Podcast. That's where you can find the College Basketball Podcast. Anyway, it's getting close, man. I mean, it's March, so technically it is March Madness. We've already seen some upsets in some of these mid-major conferences. You know, the conferences that you have to, a lot of them anyway, you have to win the conference tourney to get in. We see some 1-4 matchups that have caused some upsets. We got some decent to good matchups tonight that we will talk about. You know what I mean? We'll definitely talk about. We're a week away, actually less than a week away now that I think about it. It's Tuesday, so Selection Sunday is less than a week away. We got the conference tourneys to talk about, so we'll kind of go through all the Power Five, like they call it. Although you have to involve Power 6 and almost 7 sometimes for college basketball. It's not quite like, college football. But we're going to go through and just give our hunch, our pick, our gut feeling on who's going to win each and every one of those major conference tourneys. I think that'll be kind of a little fun segment. That'll be later in the show. That'll be the last thing we do. We'll also talk a little bit bracketology. Or bracketology, not brack. bracketology. That's what I'm just going to call it from now on. Hey, a little bit of bracketology. Bracketology, we're going to break down a little bit. We're not going to have some sort of 35-minute segment on it, though, because ultimately it only counts so much. You know, you can't sit there and go too nuts on that. But what we're going to start the show with is a little bit of, well, kind of a recap and a minor review, right? I'd say a recap and a minor review would come in handy. The minor review would be kind of in a lump sum, right? And just basically just a nice little segment on what we thought of the regular season in the non-conference so far, since we are officially done with that. The regular season is over. And then, of course, what took place the last handful of days, especially Saturday and Sunday. It wasn't just about conference titles on the lines. A lot of it was seeding in the tournament, seeding in the conference, and the big dance, you know, tournament as well. So a lot of things were established. Marshall's Tar Heels got the job done in the biggest rated college basketball regular season show in the last 2 years. We're not talking about the tourneys and the semifinals and all that, but we're talking about regular season. No matter what, whether it's CBS or Fox or whatever, this was on ESPN. That was the biggest rated show since the last time, 2 years ago, that was the biggest show, I think, in like a year and a half. So that was a fun game, very fun game. The Tar Heels cleaned it out at the end there. So we're going to recap the weekend and recap the season itself as well. So we'll start with the short term, and then we'll kind of go long term as far as reverse. So we'll start with the last handful of days for college basketball. And, you know, since we do this show and we like to talk about, you know, a variety of the conferences, some weeks we kind of stay out west, other times we're in the Big 12 kind of talking it through, talking about the ACC up in the Midwest, all the way to the Far East, the Big East. So we like to kind of focus in on certain conferences, certain teams as this thing played out. But I think it's nice to start with our home clubs, right? The cheering section. We're going to start a segment on the North Carolina Tar Heels versus the Duke Blue Devils.
Yeah.
So I'll let you start there. And then I'll get a chance to talk about my Gophers because, yeah, they lost to Wisconsin on the road, which I had said all along, and I'm 100% about that. But just kind of lump sum them up as well because they've had a hell of a season. And my guy, Patino Jr., won the Big Ten. Well-deserved, by the way. I know a lot of people want to just hand the thing to Northwestern. It's such a nice story, getting into the tournament potentially for the first time ever. I get that. But the turnaround, 8 wins last year, Marshall. 8 freaking wins, 2 in the Big Ten. You can't beat that. But we'll get to my goal for a second. We're going to let the guy, Marshall, my co-host, we're going to let him have his day in the sun. Really competitive game on Saturday. In fact, it was so competitive, and they knew it was going to be such a strong rating that the boxing that night actually waited like a good 10 to 15 minutes to make sure that thing was almost done when they started their broadcast because they knew that was going to be their biggest competition, even though the NBA was going head up. Actually, boxing beat the NBA. If you can beat that, they destroyed them, actually. It was kind of weird that night. Like I said, the biggest thing was on TV was North Carolina Duke. This is a competitive game. It went down to the last handful of minutes. Marshall, how did your boys at home with Jordan with 2-3, with number 23 in the building, how did they get it done, man?
You know, I really like just the way they just kind of – they didn't have any – I mean, they didn't go stale. Like, to summarize it, like normally when Carolina loses to Duke, it's because they forget to feed their big men, and that's a point that I made on our first recap when we lost to Duke, and that's a point that I made over the years when we lose to Duke. It's like Carolina's always had the reputation, for the most part, since I've been a Carolina fan, of having very good bigs. And Duke is more so known in general for having good three-point shooters, in theory. And in our first game we lost against them, we kind of stayed away from our bigs. And in this game, we just continued to feed them. Because we have this beautiful layout of having Meeks and Hicks and May and Justin Jackson, who plays like until we continue to share the ball. Joel Berry, our point guard, in the game against Duke on Saturday, was 5 of 5 from 3. To have a point guard that can shoot threes is not something we've always had. We normally have a good point guard that can distribute, but Joel Berry had a very nice game. Hicks, Isaiah, who has had foul trouble issues this year, buddy, stayed out of foul trouble for the most part. And he didn't play in the first game versus Duke. He ended up having, I believe, like 18 or 19 points. He had almost a double-double. Justin Jackson was very cold, but he did end up being an ACC Player of the Year. And he had a couple of clutch shots. It was just an overall very solid effort, Chris. And honestly, it was just a fun game to watch. I thought that the refs called it very tight, which is something that normally doesn't occur for Carolina and Duke. We normally always get to the free throw line less than them, and I'm not saying that as a complaint. It's just if you normally check the box for a Carolina-Duke game, Duke normally shoots more free throws. And for whatever reason, the refs were calling fouls on everyone that night. So it did become a little more of a free throw matchup, which for 80% of the game, Chris, was benefiting Duke. But down the stretch, Tar Heel favorite fanboy, Grayson Allen, bricked a couple of free throws. I think he actually missed four in a row for a stretch there.
Yeah, so or at least three out of four, that's for sure. And those two he missed back-to-back that were needed.
Yeah, because I believe it was like a four-point game or a five-point game, and he missed a couple to make it a one-possession game or take it from six to four.
Yeah, he missed two because he was two of four. He missed those two in a row, though, when they needed it.
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah, it was just overall, it was just a very well-played game.
I'm stupid. I was looking at the wrong thing. He did miss three out of four, like we mentioned, because he was 8 of 11, but the three he needed, Marshall, didn't come.
Sure. The thing, Chris, I've taken away from all my years of watching Carolina and Duke is that the game normally has, like, one team goes on a huge run, and then the other team goes on a huge run, and then you throw your punches down the stretch and see who wins. That didn't really occur, guy like in Meeks or Hicks that you can't guard down low. So we're going to score on you. But on the other hand, Duke is like, fine. Those bigs that you love to get that hurt us down low, we'll make them play defense. And they're not that good at it. So then you had a guy like Tatum, who's a phenomenal player, or the center that's always hurt. I'm drawing a blank. But Jefferson,
Giles?
It was kind of a
the guy. I got you, Jefferson. Yeah,
yeah.
Because Giles has been up and down this year, hurt a lot. That's for sure.
Yeah, it was just kind of a fun matchup game. I want to say no exaggeration. I believe there was like 24 lead changes. I mean, it's 18 for sure. Because I remember them saying there was 18 in like this mid through the second half. So it was just a simple, okay, we're gonna score, but we'll score. Okay, well we'll score. And for once, the free throw bug bit Duke down the stretch. Nate Britt did not try to go Superman on us and win the game himself. He actually sat on the bench, which actually made me feel a little more safe because he did kind of go all, you know, LeBron on it by himself, and he and LeBron in the first game it cost us. And we continued to feed our bigs. And despite the fact that Justin Jackson, who's been our 1A, 1B leader with Joel Berry, had an off night, we won the game. So it was just a very well-played game, offense and offense. It was just battle for battle. The refs called it tighter than I'm used to, Chris, for a Carolina Duke game, but fair is fair. I didn't leave that game complaining about the refs. I do think Carolina maybe got a little bit slight the first game, but I thought they called it fair both ways. They missed a couple of free throws. We shared the ball well, and our defense at moments played when we had to. Now, on one hand, you could say, well, Carolina's bigs were having trouble guarding Duke's bigs on pick and rolls. But to counter that, I could say, well, Duke's bigs, who took advantage of us out top of the key, couldn't guard us down low. So I'm not going to be too tough on Carolina's bigs for defense because it does have some very explosive players, especially a guy like Tatum are trying to come off the pick and rolls and stop Kennard. So it was just a super fun game to watch. But like I said, it was basically neck and neck the entire way through. We split the season series. We won the ACC by two games this year, so we defended our ACC crown for the regular season back-to-back. And it was just a nice boost, assuring win for the Tar Heels. Just a lot of positives to take away from it. And I like that we made our free throws because that's always kind of been our Achilles heel, unfortunately, coming down the stretch when we lost to our tribal over that the past, you know, 5, 10, 15 years.
Yeah, definitely. You're right. It was a very even game. And those free throws, you're talking about 35, 28 of 35 for Duke and 8 of 11, like I mentioned, for Allen. But those, they were 3 out of 4, and I think he missed 3 straight because I think he made one, then he missed one, and then he got on the line 2 more times and missed both of those in the clutch of the game.
And
another thing that
free throw shooter.
Yeah, that's for sure. You're right. As a whole, they generally get the job done as free throw shooters. You're right.
Mm-hmm.
Just that, you know, in general. Big stat that stood out to me, 19 assists to 8, so you doubled them on assists. I think that's a big deal. Jones really
sure.
gave them nothing, and I'm talking about basically nothing. No points, no rebounds, did get an assist and a steal in 26 minutes, but he didn't really give them much. Grayson Allen throwing bows, too. We can't forget about he was throwing some bows in there. He threw a high elbow just to make sure he was clearing space, Allen was.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
he's coming off the bench now, and he has been for a little bit, and I understand he missed a little bit of time, but I wonder how long that's going to last. Do you think Allen, for the tournament and everything like that, is gonna stay on the bench, coming off the bench?
The rumor I heard was, like, that the Duke people were saying, or Coach K was saying, that since he hurt his foot, his, like, three-point shooting's really gone down, and that he's trying to rest him to give him all the time he can on the bench so that hopefully his foot and ankle will heal up for the tournament time. Because apparently he's healthy enough to play, as we saw, Chris, but his outside shooting's really been hampered by his foot injury, so I'm thinking they're trying to limit his playing time to save him for when it truly matters, and albeit you never want to take off a rivalry game. But, yeah, so I think they're trying to be precautionary in the hope that his shooting touch will come back, because ever since he hurt his foot, I guess, maybe it's that he can't drive, or something about his game has been affected. So
no, you're right. He did hurt his foot. He was out for a little bit, and then he twisted it pretty bad. But then I thought they were just kind of, you know, warming him up to bring him back because he had been out a little bit. And obviously the – you know, he's had a lot of distractions this season as well. You know,
sure.
So I think that I thought they were just kind of humbling his ass and letting them get back in the flow, but that makes a lot of sense. So I'm sure soon we'll see him in the lineup, definitely, you know, within a week, I'd say, you know, when the real thing starts a little over a week from now. Talking about my Gophers real quick, and you're right, it was a fun game, though. That was a fun, competitive game. There was a great knockout on that CBS card, but the problem is, it wasn't on Showtime or HBO, so they can just go to the next fight and it really doesn't matter. But when you have ads to sell and you have to go till 10, you got to burn some
sure.
time. You know what I mean? Because it's a live show, so that really helped me be able to watch most of that game. That's for damn sure. And then, like I said, you could tell that some of the executives were making a decision like, hey, why don't we do this little segment? Let's let this game go, because it was neck and neck the whole time. It was a really, really fun game. Very well-played game and just entertaining. Very high scoring. I think it was like 43-40 at half or something like that, but it didn't seem like sloppiness defense or nothing like that. It was just a well-played game.
Amen.
Especially there in front of MJ, you know?
It's always nice to have the Carolina faithful. I know Rasheed Wallace, I don't think he ever misses the games, and they showed Antoine Jameson, so it's always nice to see the Carolina greats. But to be fair, Chris, I did show respect. I actually watched the entire Gopher-Badger game, too. Now, I'll clearly let you go first because that is your squad, but I was able to watch that entirely, so I do have an opinion to offer for that game as well. But overall – I'll stop. I'll let you go first. Go ahead, buddy, on your Gophers and Badgers.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was going to talk about my Gophers in general. I'm not going to talk about – have a long segment about that individual game because
– sure.
It really didn't – you know, by the time – I'd say a couple minutes into the second half is where you could start to see them take over, them play very well. Not just that, but they needed it. Wisconsin. I mean, they were – talked about this a couple times throughout the year that usually when you get a team desperate for a win, and they're, that game against Iowa that they ended up losing – or was it Iowa? Who the hell was it?
Yep, they had a late meltdown against Iowa.
That
yeah.
freaking game was crazy that they lost that game, and then they had that – late in that game, they had that ball – that bounced so freaking high that it went over like two different Badgers that were there and had positioning and jumped. I remember some Badger fan at the bar said, oh, he missed the timing on the jump. I said, dude, come on, man. Like, he's not getting that ball. Neither of those guys that were close to it were going to get that ball because it took a weird bounce. But it took such a weird bounce, the damn thing hit the floor. Like, it was just such a random way for them, especially. Not that we haven't seen that in basketball, and especially college basketball, those last, you know, moments and all that. And that's why they keep, you know, people bitch about the timeouts and all that late in games, but that's why they do it, you know, because they keep – these examples keep coming up, but I knew they were desperate for a win. I thought the Gophers played pretty damn well, obviously having their probably second-best player and some foul problems. Not Reggie Lynch, though, which was a little strange for him to be. Yeah, right? He's actually been a lot better lately on that, but that doesn't surprise me one bit, to be honest with you. So that doesn't even – I'm just talking about in general. To go from two wins in conference, eight wins overall, to end up 23-8, 11-7 in conference, and to have five straight losses in conference and be 11-7, that just says a lot. The ball's rolling. Now it's a matter of, you know, obviously a ton of people here locally are like, okay, he's gone. He's gone, you know. Patino's gone, but the thing is, they're talking about jobs, Marshall, like South Florida, and LSU, and all these jobs that aren't as they're. This isn't football. This is basketball. So there's nothing right now, anyway, that I'm afraid of just yet. I think it'd have to be a top tier program to take him away, and ultimately I think that'll happen. Now, obviously, the first team you go to is Louisville, right? At some point, Patino Sr. is going to give it up. Well, first of all, he's not done just yet, and we don't know exactly all the sanctions that are going to come for that 100%, so maybe that won't be a good job in a year or two. You never know. Not a good job, but a rebuild or whatever, you know what I mean? But the whole point is that who says he wants to go behind that kind of pressure? You know what I mean? I just think it would have to be a high-level elite job for him to leave because the Gophers in basketball have a good foundation, the recruiting's going, and we can't talk about facilities as much anymore because they're either built or going to be done in the next year and a half, and that goes for football and basketball. They have a solid stadium. No, it doesn't fit 18 or 20,000, but not many arenas in college basketball do. You know, it fits almost 15,000. It goes nuts when it's going. So I'm okay. You know, I'm okay with that. I think he'll stay. All we need is about three more years out of him anyway, you know, because then it establishes itself as a program, and then you can be more choosy about who you're going to replace it with. Rather than just before we start going, especially this year, to leave for South Florida and LSU when you got everybody but one senior coming back for next year, I just don't think he'll go personally until there's a better opportunity that comes. But I can't say enough. I mean, the point guard who's a junior, we haven't had a first time. I'm going to mute you just for a second. There is some little stuff going on there. We haven't had since 2005 Greer. We haven't had a first All Big Ten player. Murphy was a third Defensive Player of the Year, rightfully so, I thought. Even though he did get into funny, you know, foul problems, but Reggie Lynch, he had 111 blocks or something. I think he finished fourth, and I think sixth best all time in the Big Ten. So that tells you something right there. But overall, I can't be more happier. And when you look at the recruits he already has on the board and the potential that he can, like, next year we got somebody coming in that's going to be very solid. And the year after, we already have our big man to replace Lynch. And we're not even really going deep. We have, like, four scholarships available that year. So I'm really excited about what's happening. A lot of people in Minnesota just have that negative vibe and can't enjoy it. You know, I happen to enjoy when we had Garnett and Moss, and I didn't think, oh my God, it's gone, or even Cat and Wiggins right now. So many people are freaking out about them. Just enjoy it, dude. Just enjoy. Just, what was that, coach? Enjoy the season. Let me do the coaching. I think Denny Greed said that a while back. But, you know, for me, I'm just so happy that there is life in Williams Arena this year. And couldn't be happier about my Gophers. I would have never thought that they'd get a double bye right in the middle of that losing streak, man. But as far as Wisconsin, I think they finally found something in that second half, I'd say with about 13 minutes to go. They started playing kind of lights out, and they just have more momentum. Like I said, 9 in a row I'll take. I'm not worried about that one. But I'll let you have, you know, your say on that as well. Just real quick, though, while we wrap up, you know, this first segment, we did have some important games that really help people down the stretch, whether, like I mentioned earlier, whether it's seeding within your conference tourney or the big dance, right? Or the big dance. Louisville got a big win that really helped them because, you know, they lost. They had a chance to win the ACC, and they lost in North Carolina. North Carolina outplayed them. And, wow, my lights were just going in and out. What the hell was that? That was really weird. But anyway, there it goes again. Huh, I wonder what that's all about. They got it done 71-64. Kentucky cleaned up the ACC, or sorry, the SEC, 71-63. Vanderbilt, I guess Florida was still kind of reeling from being on top and slowly giving up the SEC, getting beat because they got beat by a good club in Vandy. They're definitely not any kind of bummy club. They're good. Seton Hall pulled the upset over Butler. I guess Butler was just on too much of a run. Florida State calmed things down a little bit on their front. We know they had a bad ending, 66-57, and that's ending to the season so far. But, you know, we know they're still lingering, no doubt about it. A big game in the Big Ten. Obviously, that Minnesota game, 66-49, excuse me. But a big game was Purdue and Northwestern on Sunday, Marshall. And that was a really spirited, back-and-forth defensive game that kind of started lighting up a little bit. These guys were going, and Vincent Edwards. I mean, don't get me wrong. Of course, you had 20-14 out of Swanigan. But Vincent Edwards had 16 of his 25 in the second half. Down the stretch, Purdue just managed to hit the bigger shots. I'm really liking the way this Purdue is coming in. This club is coming into the tourney, both tourneys, I should say. They've gotten some big, big wins. And we can talk about an Iowa State or an Oklahoma State or a Minnesota or a North Carolina, obviously Kansas. But, man, Purdue has been on a hell of a streak maybe out of the last 8-9 games, something like that. They've managed. They got that Badger win. They got that Maryland win. They got the Northwestern win. They really closed it out in style. So that about wraps it up on my side, kind of talking some of this through. I'll let you give your take on some things. And, you know, just kind of talk about, you could talk about that game or any other games, but then we could talk about just overall, you know, as we're closing, coming down the stretch to the big dance, just how, you know, how this season has gone, because it's been a really entertaining season, man. It's been really fun, and it's really lived up to what it felt like midway through the season, where you thought, man, I have no clue who's going to win this, and I love it as a fan.
Some of the games. Was simply the fact that the bubble this year, Chris, just seems kind of like lame. I was talking to my friend. I was like, normally there's like, you know, a drive for who's on the bubble this year. And there's not a lot of mid-majors I've heard spoken of. And I know a place like obviously St. Mary's or, you know, Butler. Like, you know, those technically aren't the major five conferences, but those aren't like bubble teams. But like these, they always do like the blind resumes of teams that are close to being in. And for example, like Kansas State this year in California, like on the brink of being in or not. And I've looked at their resumes. I'm like, dear Lord, like, really? Like, that's our bubble this year? So I think it's kind of cool and kind of weird because normally you have, like, teams that are lower than top and you're like, oh, man, is it going to be Kansas or Kentucky or Carolina or Duke this year that wins it? But this year it's kind of like, oh, man, like, we got 12 or 13 teams that could legit be in the Final Four. But this year the bubble is kind of like, kind of like throw some people in. I mean, looking at a resume of California, I was like, okay, well, I'm like, God, they must have beaten some like Arizona's or the UCLA's or they like they swept, Oregon. It's like, dude, your resume's sad. And K-State, like, I think they beat Baylor and that's about their only – so it's just kind of weird how there's not like this – mid-major force, it's like a big deal or special, and the bubble teams are kind of like, yeah. Because, you know, normally part of the fun of March Madness is like, oh, who's on the bubble or what mid-major team is going to steal a conference bid from a team in a big conference that's like so on the brink. And this year, the bubble talk, I mean, we're having it, but it's kind of like, yeah, we got teams on the bubble. They've been pretty crappy this year. But they're still on the bubble, so here we go. And I just mentioned this just because this is something I normally don't have. This is normally a conversation that doesn't exist. I normally kind of enjoy the bubble. Like, you and I had fun arguing and going back and forth on who should have been in the Final Four this year for college football. Now, obviously, the importance of a Final Four in college football is much more of a heavier discussion because it matters more. Bubble, normally every year we're like, oh man, this team's on the bubble. What do you think about them, Chris? And should they get in or should they not get in? This year I'm looking at the bubble. I'm like, dude, you played yourself out of it. If you don't get in, like, you got your, you know, lame regular season to blame for yourself. So just kind of a weird rant, but one I felt worth mentioning because the draw for the bubble just isn't there this year to me like it normally is. For the conferences themselves, obviously, quickly on your Gophers, they just ran into a Wisconsin team who had not played that good at basketball for like seven games. That the final 15 minutes against the Gophers was the best basketball Wisconsin's played like since 2 months ago. So, but overall, obviously, the ACC tournament already started today. I'm gonna rip myself right now, Chris, because I know a shot will come later. Obviously, the Big East tournament, one that we wish we could truly have.
We're not picking the winners just yet. We're not on that segment yet. I don't know if you're going that way.
No. I was just taking a shot at myself about how the ACC tournament started today, and I assume you're going to take a shot at me for saying that, you know, the Big East was, you know, not that great of a tournament, or, you know, my naive standpoint back in the day. But conference play has begun. I actually do have another random topic, and I'll throw it back to you. But last night, I was watching Siena and Iona. And last year, this was a game of two great teams, again, fighting for one bid out of a conference. And Iona had the team that was, like, crazy and on the bench celebrating hardcore every time they made a shot and kind of was a spectacle from that. They were playing in a game, and my buddy told me to turn on. So it was basically a tie game with 3 minutes to go. The teams traded hoops back and forth. Then they went into overtime, and again, trade hoops back and forth. And then, God, I don't want to get this wrong, Siena, I believe Siena was down.
Iona and Siena, that was a good game. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, who ended up winning so I can deliver my point? Because I had the colors and the names messed up in my head.
You're breaking up pretty weird right now. I didn't
really
hear what you just said. I heard just chunks, but I didn't.
Oh.
It could be on my side, too. I'm not. I didn't hear what you're. What did you last say? I heard something about Siena, and you were trying to, like, find Iona,
their
opponent or something. I'm not sure.
Yeah, who won the Siena-Iona game? I was trying to just to deliver my point.
Wait a second. Just for the record, you're making a point, but you don't know who won?
Well, the thing was is the colors I had in my head of what Siena were were the opposite colors, and it was one Iona.
It was Iona,
wearing,
by the way. I believe, wasn't it double overtime or just one? It was double, wasn't it? No, it was just one overtime.
But the whole time I had a different color for a team. So it was like my left brain and right brain were like playing tricks on me all night. So anyway, there's 25 seconds left in Siona, who did lose. Their coach deserved a lot of blame. There was 25 seconds left. You're down two. What you do as a basketball coach is you go in for a shot. Like, you go in for a good layup or maybe even try to take the lead and shoot a three. And then if you don't make the shot, you foul. And then you play the free throw game. I guess this coach had so much pride and so much belief in his players that he didn't need to do that. He milked down
now,
the entire clock.
Now, what's the score at this point you're talking about with a minute? What's the score?
Okay.
It's a tie game?
There 25 seconds left. Siena has the ball down two. I would say in most situations, if you're down two, 25 seconds to go, you don't rush a shot, but you definitely go in for a shot and you take a layup to try and tie it up. Maybe shoot an open three if you can, and if you don't make it, you foul.
You try to do it somewhat fast.
Yeah, exactly. You don't need to rush, but you definitely want to go in there for a shot. This coach said, screw it, and literally wasted the entire clock. And then what do they get? A contested, ugly, jacked-up three with like 4 seconds left on the clock in the game. And I was just mind-blown. It's like this is not a regular season game. Your school is not –
wasn't that with 6 seconds left? Wasn't that later in that, though, that missed three? That was when the game was tied.
No, this was down – this happened when the team was down two.
Okay, because they were – they missed a jumper, but it wasn't – okay. I was thinking when you said three, I don't think it was a three, but I got you.
Oh, okay. Well, they did miss one down the stretch in regulation. But, yeah, so – I don't get the mindset, and I know I'm only a first-year basketball coach. I'm not some high and mighty person, and I'm not trying to come off like arrogant or anything, but I just don't get it. Your school, the only way you make the big dance is if you win a game. So to have the, I guess, cockiness, or maybe that's not the right word, but to have the, I'll say cockiness or arrogance, to wait the entire clock out, and only give your team one shot when you're down two with 25 seconds. I was just blown away. I'm like, are they seriously dribbling out the clock? And if you were to do that, you best believe that you do have a guy like a LeBron or a Westbrook that's going to score you a bucket, if not, get fouled. But they waited the clock down. Iona played great defense. They hoisted up an ugly, awful shot, and that's how your season ended. And that had to be a coach decision, because I guarantee a player would not do that. If I was a coach, I'd be like, dude, go for a layup. Like you said, don't rush. But I was just, you know, we always have those conversations, Chris, where at the end of the bowl season, you're like, oh, man, this bowl game you and I watched, like, what was that coach doing? Like, that was crazy. And I don't know, something just came over, but it's like, dude, you're down two. And you're milking the clock and waiting for one shot, and then that's how your season ends? I guess I feel bad for the kids. It's like, dude, what mindset makes a coach think of like, man, I'm just gonna wait, I'm gonna hold out the clock, and then what you go for a win off an ugly shot, like you don't even go for a tie. I was just blown away, and I would get if you were Carolina or your Gophers, teams that are shoo-in for the dance, like you know. But dude, your kids are trying to win because you don't get an automatic bid because you're in like the MAC conference or something. I just thought it was very poor coaching, and I felt that you put the kids in a tough spot, and the shot they put up was sad. And it was a very fun game to watch. These are teams that have been competitive neck and neck for the last 3 years in their respectable division, but this was just coaching blunder. Kind of like number one of March for me. Now, obviously, I don't think, Chris, anything will take the cake from the Texas A&M meltdown last year, which was a meltdown for the ages. But this is definitely one moment where I was like, dude, I would have been cursing under my breath if I was a player there with a coach putting me in that situation. But I'll stop my rant there. But I was just so utterly confused that maybe the coach thought the game was tied. I don't know. It was definitely a mental mistake, in my opinion.
Well, and I'll tell you what, they kind of, both teams actually kind of did that because they did a similar thing Iona did near, and I was a little confused that if you were talking about overtime or right before the end of regulation. I think that's where I got screwed up. I know exactly what you're talking about now. But Iona kind of did the same thing down two, and they didn't get a shot off till like pretty deep in that. And that kind of stood out to me as well. But what you're saying, I definitely agree with. It did kind of seem strange. Obviously, it seemed like a lot of people were standing around waiting for it too. So it's not like somebody screwed up the play. It'd be different if someone screwed up the play and didn't set a screen, so they had to reboot and they had to, you know, that type of thing. It did look like people were just wait. It was like a plan for that to happen. And so, therefore, it did seem exactly like what you're saying as far as, you know, being a coach decision at that point. That's what it seemed like to me. I'd have to agree with you there. Go ahead, go ahead.
Lastly, one other note is I get, Chris, that money does carry the load or does play a factor for, like, the ACC tournament or the Big 12 or the Big East.
Hold on. Like, you're not going to start talking about ACC being in the Barclays Center in New York, the biggest media market in the world, are you?
No.
I thought we got that figured out last week. Just making sure.
But money clearly drives where these big tournaments are played. The one super cool thing about the smaller conference tournaments, who do normally only get one bid in, you got to win your conference tournament to get in. It is super cool that a lot of the conference tournaments are played on a team's home court. Now, obviously, it is very tough to go on the road and like beat like a team like Valparaiso, who I can just recall because they've been to March Madness, I think, a handful of times since you and I have done our show. And for Valparaiso, they always play on their home court. But it is kind of neat to see a conference tournament game played on a team's home court, just because that crowd is absolutely insane. And if you're the visitors, you're like, dude, we got to walk through like this battlefield to make it. But it also makes it kind of even sweeter, because then you see a team whose season just ended. Dreams are crushed. Meanwhile, other team is celebrating on the floor, you know, like they just accomplished their dream. So I get you can never do that for a big conference, but it is cool to see like all these small conferences playing their conference tournaments out on a team's court who like won the conference. I've always thought that's kind of a neat setup and provides a even more special environment for these teams. Like, you know, like Carolina, if we lose on Thursday, it sucks. Maybe we'll lose a one seat, but it's like my day goes on. For these small conference tournaments, it's like, dude, you got to be on pins and needles. So it's even more cool, in my opinion, you get to do it on the court of a team who's in your division too. Just a, I guess, kind of a fun fact for me. I think it makes the excitement level watching those games, Chris, go up even more, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying. Yeah, definitely. I think that's a good point. Overall, though, just kind of looking at, you know, the new updated on a Tuesday on ESPN.com, the new bracketology, with a lot of people like to debate back and forth. And, you know, your bubble talk, I hear you. I think you get into the bubble talk more than I do, because I look at some of these 8 and 9s, Wichita State and VCU are an 8 and 9 in this right now. And that's those two in particular mid-majors. That's a hell of a little matchup if that were to happen, that's for sure. I'm kind of looking down at these, and I see some matchups that are pretty damn interesting. St. Mary's sitting at a 6th seed. Vandy, 6'11". We know 6'11" for years was the big payoff. Now you're starting to see 4-13 in the 3-14 pay off a little bit more. A hot team in Oklahoma State would be there in the second round for Louisville. That could be interesting. They've definitely taken on some of the heavy hitters, and they're hot. They're hot as just about as any team. Virginia Tech and Northwestern. to me would be a phenomenal game. I like that lineup right there. That's a pretty good.
Wow.
Yeah, that would be a pretty fun game. That would be really fun. Another one I'm looking at, Miami-Michigan, that would be very competitive as well. These 8-9s, they're supposed to be like that, but, man, if these 8-9s are like this, sign me up, dude. Sign me up for this one. Obviously, they have North Carolina, Villanova. They have Gonzaga, and obviously Kansas. I'd assume Kansas is the – as much as you don't like to hear it, I'm assuming they're the number one overall seed. I think they've deserved it. I think Gonzaga, just because they have one loss, shouldn't get the overall one seed just because they haven't had to, slew that same type of schedule. But, man, speaking of 6-11s, so my Gophers are up to a 6. Some of them have them at as high as a 4 and a 5. That was before the loss. But on the road at Wisconsin, in the end, it's not going to look too good. But – or too bad, I should say. But Minnesota against Syracuse, and then Arizona next round. But at Syracuse, that would be kind of an interesting first round matchup. I don't know if I need all that. I don't know if I need a program that has recruiting in it like that. I'm not sure I like that matchup for an 11 seed. That's for sure. But you look down at some of these 11s, you go, huh? Okay, so Louisville. So on the top where Kansas is, Louisville is the second seed. UCLA would be the third. That'd be a really interesting one. UCLA in that. Now, Gonzaga being number one, they would have Oregon and Butler right now as the third. Butler made a hell of a run. I don't know. Maybe that loss will hurt them a little bit. It's not a bad, bad loss by any stretch. Seton Hall's pretty good, but yeah, that may bank them out of that spot. But then again, Villanova, they've been steady all year, and they beat them twice. They're 28-3, and Butler beat them twice, which is that's pretty crazy. But anyway, Nova would have Baylor as their number two. Baylor's still hanging around. Florida State at 3. And then to finish it off, North Carolina, Arizona, and Kentucky. It would be their 2 and 3. What? Go ahead. Talk about a little what you see on the bracketology. I heard you say something about Wisconsin. They got Middle Tennessee. They get Syracuse. They got Middle Tennessee. We already played Middle Tennessee, actually. That's crazy.
That'd
they
be
get
a dream
Tennessee.
For us.
What the hell?
Because that'd be in Orlando, so we could actually see the Badgers live. That'd be sweet. Because I believe, Chris, we always – now, Grant, I normally never go to the games in my crew because I always like to go check out the restaurant establishments of a city, because that's how I roll. But it will be super neat if our crew got to see Wisconsin play. And the way they've been playing, they are kind of about that 6 or 7 seed, and we will be in Orlando this year. So there's obviously a very high chance that we will get Florida State and Florida. But a Florida State-Wisconsin game on a Saturday-Sunday, that would be – oh, that'd be awesome. That'd be a lot of fun. And obviously
yep.
– and Maryland being a – Maryland and Baylor, 2-7, that would be – I would actually find that extremely fascinating because those are two teams where they've definitely had moments in this year where people say they're like a legit maybe top-10 team, but then – they also had quite a few. Maryland especially kind of fell off the cliff, and Baylor kind of struggled for a month or two, so that'd be kind of a fun one. I kind of like how these seeds are set up for now. Now, clearly, I try not to get too hopeful with how these seeds are because every
exactly.
year, like, you know. You
it's really
you're
about
like, oh,
getting
man,
in the tourney, you know.
Yeah.
It's like you look at the bracketology saying these teams are probably going to be in the tourney, and location I don't know for a fact. But they'll probably
sure.
be near these seeds, you know?
Yeah. And you know, I believe the committee says they try to factor in first-round spots for top-four seeds. Now, clearly, the overall destination of where you play your regional does matter, so you can't just throw teams around
sure.
everywhere. But overall, they do try to factor in location, which can be very beneficial or if you were Carolina,
North Carolina,
4 years ago, you had to play freaking. You had to play Kansas in Kansas City back to back years. That was some BS, if I may say so. it's like I got to complain about the Carolina region play area of conference or tournament play, like I'm hitting my Lane Kiffin quota.
Why don't you go to – oh, wait, there is no real class to go to, so forget it. I was going to say you should go back to class, but we all know those are fake at North Carolina, so you know what I mean? Anyway.
Overall,
I didn't delay about it. Been there since, 2000-something, and he doesn't know a thing about it. Huh, weird.
We have better lawyers than my USC boys did, apparently.
That's for
sure. Overall,
they're open and talking about it, though. You know, they're not saying it's a witch hunt, you know, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's a lot smarter, you know what I mean? Because that's what USC did, witch hunt.
Yeah.
Tonight, Marshall, number 4, Gonzaga against St. Mary's, which was a good game last game. That's probably the best game we got on paper, but that's not to say – dude, we could do a crafty pick right here, dude. Check out this, dude. Crafty pick right here. I literally have to look so deep into these freaking names I don't even know. I know one's Jacksonville State, but Southern – so Southern U Sports is what the – Southern against Jacksonville State. And when you look at this lineup here, dude, this is a tough one.
14 and 17.
I mean, tell me that's not equally matched. Just try to tell me that that's not equally matched. 14 and 17. That's not a. I mean, you never know what happens next year. Just ask the Gophers. These clubs could be in the tourney, for all we know. Okay, maybe I'm overdoing it. But that there's like. Right now, this week, it's like crafty pick of the week, like all over the place, man.
Wow. You have the Jackson State. Let's see, what the heck are they called?
Jackrabbits or something? I don't know what the hell they are.
Oh, they're the Tigers. So you got the Jackson State Tigers, traveling to Baton Rouge. So maybe our Louisiana Lafayette Raging Cajuns are providing cater, which does matter because our Raging Cajuns are special. And they're they're playing Southern. Now, they don't really give us a hint for their name.
The Southern
Jags.
That's what it is. The Jags or something like that.
Southern Chris
now,
is
for those
a 4.5
don't know what the crafty pick is, we find Marshall, I don't even know what the hell's going on. Marshall, on the show, picks the worst matchup of the college football week, and I have to pick it. And all I do is go on the ESPN.com, and I just look at the stats from both sides, and we kind of have fun with it. And that's why we're talking about these matchups this week, because you got like 14 and 17 going against 14 and 17 type thing. So that's just a fun little segment. But I'd say on paper, that game out in the West Coast Conference is the best. Although when you got like Iona and Siena, you know, that was awesome, too, last night. So there are going to be some of these games you just got to watch. Hey, you know what I do? In the first half, North Kentucky and Milwaukee. Milwaukee, Wisconsin, actually, is pretty decent normally. But this year, they had a coaching change, and this year, they're pretty much garbage. But they're normally pretty good. In fact, Springs, our only senior, came from that, and he wanted to finish the year with them, or he wanted to do a senior year with them, but the coach changed. And he's like, all right, dude, we're done. You know, this is a bunch of players left, so he left too. And now they're kind of in shambles. But my point is, really took a while to get to that point. 31-28 at half, right? Just DVR the second one. Or tune in if you don't have a DVR. Tune in the second half, the last 10 minutes. I promise you, there's so much at stake in some of these games and the minor conferences, the mid-major, that it just turns out to be just a blast all of a sudden. You know, it's great, man. And some of these games really, like I said, it means the world to them. And so it is kind of fun during this week as the bigger conferences, you know, start getting going. Obviously, we'll start to go into the conference tournament. We're going to go to each of the larger conferences.
Hold on, though, Chris.
Go ahead.
For the crappy pick of the week, which we'll just take Jackson State, then we'll follow up on that game. You know, part of the thing we do love to do, especially this year, was kind of make fun of the names of the arenas, because San Jose State's arena this year is like
right.
San Jose Facility of Orange County of California /
whoever
activity
the
area.
Money. Sure, we'll call it that.
You'll love this one, Chris. At Baton Rouge, Louisiana, playing when Jackson State plays Southern again. Southern's -4.5. If you want to cash in your bet, they're the favorite, despite having identical regular season conference records. They're playing the F.G. Clark Activity Center. The F.G. Clark Activity Center. That just sounds fitting to how
Activity
our college football
center.
Activity Center.
If you think
are
you're going to go into
playing
this Activity
in a rec
Center,
hall?
You try to come out there alive with a W, you don't walk into the Activity Center. Doesn't that just sound horrible?
I'm not sure if you're allowed to walk in, Chris. I mean, is this like a YMCA that's been turned over, or a former like a church basement where they're like letting people come for games? Activity, the F.G. Clark Activity Center.
Standing room only, 1,500 people in here. We got popcorn. We got sodas. I think we got some Starburst around here, but I'll tell you what, we got ourselves a game.
You must donate to the church before you come in.
That's just a quarterfinal in the SWAC, dude.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a big matchup for quarterfinal in the SWAC, dude.
Now, can an activity center host a championship game, or do they move locations?
I guess we got our answer, dude. Because, I mean, it is the SWAC, so you know the sponsorship is through the roof. Who doesn't know the SWAC?
Maybe Louisiana Lafayette, maybe our Raging Cajuns, our adopted team from college football, maybe they host the finals. Maybe they do that for catering and for money to help promote the football team for next year. They host the SWAC finals, and they use money to put in the football program. That could happen. You never
know. That could totally happen. And here's the deal. Jacksonville, what are they, the Snakes? What do you say, the Jacksonville?
Jackson State. Jags, right? Or Southern Jags?
No. I think it's the Southern Jaguars. I don't know. But anyway, they shoot 38% as a team from the field.
Ooh.
That's not good.
They're the Tigers.
I don't
Jackson
know if
State
anybody
Tigers.
Knows that, but that's not good. Oh, yeah, the Tigers. So the Tigers, they grind it out, though, pretty well in overtime. They lose in overtime, but they'll take you there. They'll definitely take you there. Southern's on a 3-game losing streak coming into this.
Uh-oh.
Ow. This is a hell of a matchup. And so Jackson State in this situation, you said this is in Louisiana, right? So they're on the road. They're coming in on the road.
Yep.
And you know how I like those roads. I like the road. So I think I'm going with the Jacksonville State
Tigers.
Tigers. That's who I'm going with, Jacksonville State Tigers.
Okay, well, I love the dog pick, but maybe we need to be more philosophical. Okay, so you're in a jungle, Chris, and you see a tiger walk upon a jaguar.
They don't let tigers into the activity center. They don't let tigers into the activity center. Sorry, man. No tigers in the activity center. It's standing room only, dude. That's a whole different ballgame, dude.
I was gonna pose one of those great questions of, Ditka, if a tiger bites a jaguar,
right,
who wins?
Beyond like the colors or the mascot, or like the colors in the mascot combo, that's kind of how beyond like the women that know what they're that foul college basketball like crazy. Beyond that, that's usually women will look at the color scheme, or they'll go head up. Well, this mascot animal would beat that mascot. And you know what? A lot of times we do something at our bar. You know, we do a big pool, and in the top 10, you're going to find two or three, four women. And sometimes they're not hardcore fans, but they follow it a little bit, and then they make the decisions based off something like that, which, you know what? It's not bad. It works. That's for damn sure. And let's get this moving here. The ACC.
All right.
The ACC, right? Now, I believe how it's set up, and, you know, remember when I worked at that Applebee's back in the day? Dude, we had such a hardcore base to our brackets that we used to pick out four or, no, we used to do all six.
I remember that.
The conference tourney brackets. I mean, we had like 16 people deep on that. It was awesome, dude. It was awesome. But ACC tournament. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe Louisville and North Carolina meet in the semifinals on that. I mean, if everything, you know, as long as Louisville wins or whatever, that's the matchup. And I see Louisville, it doesn't matter now because it was, you know, they lost the one that really, 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 really counted for the ACC. However, I just think that's going to be in the back of their head. They played pretty good that day, not great. I'm picking the Louisville Cardinals to beat the Heels and win the ACC tournament this weekend.
I can't argue that. Every time we played Louisville, I think since Patino's or the last 5 years, it's always neck and neck. And also, I mean, Carolina didn't win the ACC last year, so I'm going to be super sad. But if we do win it this year, we will then have the same amount of ACC tournament wins as Duke does. So, I mean, Carolina's playing good basketball, but again, I think you do have the occasional mindset of, do you want your team to play three games or do you just want them to get rested? Or is that talk all alone, just a bunch of, you know, BS, you know, because I mean, obviously these kids are going to be rested. They're playing for their careers, you know, when they make the dance, but I guess I'm kind of going back and forth.
Remember that five in a row. Remember Syracuse 5 in a row, they won it, and they lost the first round.
Yeah. And that, I mean, that was one of the craziest runs ever, you know. But then you're, you know, 5 in a row, then you can't worry about the mental drain. And that same thing with now how big the ACC is. Teams that play today, in theory, maybe Clemson or Wake Forest could win the ACC, but that is 5 days in a row. Okay, because you played today, and Georgia Tech is playing Pitt right now. It's a 29-26 Pitt, but it's a gauntlet. And that's one thing kind of cool when Carolina beat Duke. They made them play now tomorrow instead of playing on Thursday. Overall, just for the heck of it, I'll pick my Tar Heels. I think they're playing very good basketball. But Roy, I mean, we kind of have a knack for getting bounced out on this thing. So, I don't know, Chris. I mean, you made a good pick with Louisville. I'll take Notre Dame. Just, I guess, not eat my.
Cause so now you've made a pick, then you changed it, and now you've made a new pick.
It's just a conference title.
Let's not go too deep on this stuff. So you got.
I'll take my Tar Heels.
Okay,
Heels.
That's
well,
three picks.
Sadly, it's in Brooklyn, but you know, oh well.
Who wants to expand the league to the biggest media market in the world? Sorry, not just America, in the world. West Virginia, Baylor, Iowa State, Oklahoma State. Who's going to be able to beat Kansas, if any? You tell me that.
You know.
You only can pick one team this time, not four. North Carolina doesn't play in the Big 12, as you know, so they can't win both conference championships.
This one, I swear, Kansas always freaking wins this thing. It does seem like they always win this tournament. It's in Kansas City, which is clearly rigged for Kansas. But I will
Raleigh.
take...
Raleigh.
It sounds right, like you're coughing. If you need me to run the show for a little bit, I can.
Run it right out of Raleigh. Or no, what am I saying? I forgot what I was saying. We'd
maybe,
set up
maybe
in
you're
Raleigh,
new
but rap you know why? We're not going to go to that city.
I will take Iowa State to win it. I think that they will beat Kansas. They beat them once this year. They'll do it again. My Iowa State boys get hot, and they beat Oklahoma State, and they knock off KU, and then they will beat Baylor in the championship of Big 12. So I will take the Iowa State Cyclones. It is a homer pick, but they've been playing great ball coming down the stretch, and I got to pick someone besides Kansas because God knows they're always freaking winning everything Big 12. What about you, buddy?
I got Baylor. You know, okay. The way they started the season, everyone was so high on them. They're still lingering at the second seed because of some quality wins, especially in non-conference. I think they're going to reach up and kind of surprise everybody right now. Nah, I shouldn't say surprise, but I think they're gonna get their positive mojo going before the tournament, that positive mojo they had a couple months back. I'm going to go with that. Now on to the Big East, which we know is a heartbreaker. I've said it millions of times, and I really appreciate what they tried to do and what they did to keep that conference alive basketball-wise, adding Creighton. I mean, even adding Marquette, you know, it's been there for a while now. But, you know, they added them somewhat in the last little bit, even Xavier and that type of thing and Butler and all that. So I think they've done a good job. Obviously, this weekend is nowhere near as fun as it was without the Friday and the Saturday Big East prime time on ESPN, the semifinal and the final. So many great, 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 great stories. And even, like you said, during the week, now the ACC is that type of big-ass conference. That's why you're seeing the Tuesday games, you know, because it's so huge. But I feel like Nova, first of all, Butler's not going to beat them three times. And I just think Nova has the answer to anybody's question at them. I think they'll get that done.
I will go on a limb and take Providence. Not
right.
Sure why, I'm just picking them, Chris. So
just
for
like
fun.
That.
I mean,
they're a good club. I mean, they're well.
No, I mean they are. Yeah, they're the three seed in the Big East, and they're going to the dance. Yeah, I'll just pick someone for fun. Obviously, we haven't seen them play much, and Villanova clearly be a very strong Vegas favorite to win that conference tournament. But yeah, I'll go out on a limb, and I'm kind of with you. Picking Butler, can they really beat a team three times in a row? I guess time will tell. Moving on, we do go to the Big Ten tournament, which, again, your Gophers are in. I believe this little back-and-forth talk, Northwestern, they're for sure in. The Badgers are in. But all these teams could be kind of going around up and down for a couple of seed spots here and there. I believe that your Gophers currently are at a 6, but you win a couple of games in the Big Ten, you could maybe shift to a 4 or 5. I think Wisconsin right now is about at a 6 or 7, and it could go up to a 5, or maybe you lose, you go to an 8. And I've said it again, I hate if my teams are ever an 8 seed, because it means, as you've said, to kind of tally us all together, an 8 or 9 game almost always comes down to the wire, or at least seems that 2 of the 4 are always buzzer beaters. And then you get the great presence from the gods to play a 1 seed. And not that 8 seeds can't beat 1 seeds, but it's sure a very tough weekend and an emotional heartbreak for a fan to go through a nail-biter game that pull off an upset. So now is your time to make up ground. For the Big Ten tournament itself, I'm going to go with – I'm actually going to go with Wisconsin, Chris. I think that – actually, no, I can't do that. Wisconsin. I think maybe they found their groove again against your Gophers. Now, clearly they played pretty crappy down the stretch, but maybe that was a confidence boost needed. And the kind of
they only got beat
watch,
up once, too. You know, most of them were tight games. They only got beat up by Ohio State. Otherwise, most of them came down to the wire. They just screwed up.
True.
They just weren't the team that closes like they normally do, and that's why it was so weird to see that Iowa game, you know?
Mm-hmm. The one team to put a little highlighter on that is on a true bubble mark, again, not that they've had a great quality year this year, but they're scraping wins together at the very end, is Iowa. Iowa plays Indiana in a couple of nights, and if Iowa could beat Wisconsin again for the second time in like a week, that might be a boost for them to get in. No one really thought Iowa had a chance, and you know they were chilling in left field making sandcastles. But they beat Maryland, they beat Wisconsin, they beat Penn State, so they finished the year very strong. They have a garbage loss like Omaha, which is pretty sad. But for a Big Ten true bubble team, Iowa, if you could win against Indiana and then beat the Badgers, that might be a true shoo-in for you. The ACC, we could probably spend 20 minutes on that. But it does seem, Chris, that just to go back for a second, it does seem that there's a boatload of teams in the ACC where this conference tournament does matter, because it seems like, well, five of them could be in or could be out. So, again, not that the bubble is super impressive this year, but there are a couple of teams that
you're making an anti-case against your point, actually, by doing what you just said.
I don't think the bubble resumes are impressive, but there are teams on the bubble. So, I mean, there's got to be a bubble in general. I just think it's a lower-tier bubble than normal. But for the Big Ten,
you're disappointed by the bubble. So when we're sitting in April, you're going to be like, man, that was an awesome tournament, but that bubble talk just sucked this year.
Iowa needs to win to get in. That's my quick bubble talk for today. What did your gut say?
And that's
do you have your
cool,
golden
gophers
cutting down the net?
The Gophers were bubble bursters, dude, because it was like, oh, you're on the bubble? Knock you off. Oh, you're on the bubble. Yeah, knock you off. You're on the bubble. Oh, knock you off. We just kept knocking Iowa, Michigan, Indiana. We just kept pushing people off the edge. It was quite nice. It was quite nice. I think the only
and
team in there
was Illinois.
Maybe. Illinois Rutgers. Oh, actually, technically, Illinois was on the bubble, too. Or still are on the bubble, aren't they? Down
there.
I can't remember. But either way, I'm going with the Badgers, too. I think that they're going to close like the Badgers that we're used to. And
sure.
I think this is just a perfect time for them. Maybe it's that last 14 minutes of play, 12 minutes of play. Maybe it's just overall, all right, guys, like they're starting to become no tomorrow now. You know what I mean? Here we are. Let's just do it. So I like them. As far as the Pac-12 goes, I like Kentucky in the SEC. I'll just say that right out. You got Oregon.
I'll take Florida.
Okay. Oregon, Arizona, and UCLA. Right? That's what you got going on for the top teams in the Pac-12. It's pretty impressive, I'd say. We haven't dogged on Pac-12, but we just haven't had a good reason to talk to them beyond, you know, Arizona, because they're the ones making the run out of there. No. I'm talking about the last couple of years. I'm not talking about this year.
Well, and the effing Pac-12 channel network has taken away a lot of good games this year. There's been a lot of nights, Chris, where I'm like, oh, man, it'll be sweet. I can watch USC play, UCLA tonight, or Oregon play, Utah, or Pac-12 Network. Right. In football, they normally kind of take away the crappy games for the Pac-12 football, but in basketball, there's a lot of nights where I'm like, oh, dude, I can watch this for our show and just for fun. It's like, no, I can't.
They need to suck it up and take a little bit lower in the first couple of years of the contract and then build from there and come back and say, see, now we need a bigger contract or something, because I agree. But the point is, Arizona, Oregon, UCLA. Now, Arizona, UCLA definitely finished a tish better than Oregon. Oregon kind of had that momentum taken away from them minorly. They were up against UCLA. And they lost that game. Obviously, UCLA beating Arizona. That was UCLA definitely closed the strongest against the top teams. But I think Oregon will reestablish its dominant play at times, especially that butt whooping they put on Arizona. I'm going with Oregon to win that that Pac-12 tourney.
And speaking of a bracket layout in general, Chris, it is best case for them considering Arizona and UCLA did finish 2-3. which means they'd only have to play one team. You'd assume Oregon will win its first game against Arizona State or Stanford, then they play a winner of whoever Utah could play, and if they beat those eight. So they can only play one of them. But I'll take Arizona. I think that Oregon might be the most well-put-together team. UCLA might have the most talent, but I think Arizona might have the best coach. So I will take Arizona to win the Pac-12 tournament. And for as tough as that conference has been over the last couple of years, if you were just to go simply on conference championship games, the Pac-12 almost never has a dud. I mean, the Big 12, it's like, Kansas, what are they going to do? Carolina, Duke kind of take your turns. The Big East obviously isn't quite what it is, unfortunately, of late. But the Pac-12 championship game is almost always super good. The tournament itself might be, but their championship game is almost excellent. So if we were to get an Oregon rematch with UCLA or Arizona, that would be a pretty fun one to watch, Chris. And that actually is in Vegas this year. Wow. They normally, I believe, are in California, but they are traveling to Sin City to take part in the basketball tournament this year for the Pac-12.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they were there last year, too. I could be wrong, though, at the MGM.
I know the MGM last year did host a mid-major conference tournament, but it easily could have been this week, and then you get the Pac-12 next week. So you could easily be right, brother. I'm not sure, but that's definitely a possibility. And speaking of that, I wanted to tell you this quickly before I forgot, but it is kind of strange that essentially the number one pick last year you had Ben Simmons from LSU missing the tournament, that this year the number one pick that most people believe, Markelle Fultz at Washington, is missing the tournament. It's just kind of a random fact, but it's kind of strange that the best player in college basketball the last 2 years will not go to the dance. And last year, at least LSU was a definite bubble team.
Speaking of bubble, that's why you were so pumped about the bubble last year, because it had Simmons. That's why.
Oh. But this year, we will now have a second year in a row where the best player on the ranking boards does not go to the tournament. So it's kind of trippy. I think it does go to the tournament.
That's got to be like a first. That's a great point.
It is just kind of odd. You're like, okay, well, and it does go to show, now clearly this is going to a high extreme, but how Calipari does do it right. Because he does bring in the freshmen, and he really grooms them up. Clearly Kentucky's established a strong dynasty. And I'm not comparing Kentucky basketball to LSU and Washington. But every year he does bring in the fresh kids, and he gets them to go. But it's the second year now where, normally you can get by with one stud. But we now have a second year now where Markelle Fultz and Ben Simmons cannot guide their teams to the tournament. And Washington alone's actually had a very poor year. They do have the best player in the land, but I believe they're an under 500 team in conference. So just kind of a random fun fact to throw in there. But I will be curious to see, though, for great players, Monk. I'm kind of switching conference here for a second, but this knock on him, Chris, of how he's one of the best players in the country, but he's only good and he's only really a great shooter in Rupp Arena. Well, your Rupp Arena days are over. So for a guy that could be the second or third overall pick or all of Lonzo Ball, I kind of want to see this because I don't want to buy into this media talk, Chris, that, maybe the kid does shoot better at home for Kentucky. But this is a kid that dropped 50 on Carolina, dropped 30 on Florida last week, played out of his mind, as you said earlier in the year, might have some of the smoothest handles you've seen for a freshman. And when he goes in the air, he just kind of coasts and jumps. I don't think he's going to disappear these next couple of weeks of March and maybe April 2nd or 3rd for a title just because he's not playing on his home court. And I could be wrong. Maybe he'll have a one-and-done game and shoot the team out of the tournament. But the knock I've heard about him all year was Monk's a great player, but he's really only great at Kentucky. And when he's not at Kentucky, he's just above average. I think that little ESPN tweet, I think that goes away, bud, because I think, as you've mentioned, and we've seen the kid's special. So I think his location center will not truly affect his box score. I think that a lot of the nation is going to get to see a great player like him kind of take off later as these weeks play out, my friend.
Yep. I think that about wraps it up. Did we cover all the big – I think we got all the conferences, didn't we? The big ones anyway?
Do you think there's any chance tonight that St. Mary's could knock off the Zags? I mean, the war path they've been going on, they swept them twice this year. I know you said that you don't think Butler could beat Nova twice. I know it's kind of a different scenario. But do you think that the St. Mary Gales, who are a lock-in, being ranked 20th, basically, seems like for the last month, any chance they pull off an upset tonight versus the Zags, or the Zags just too loaded and ready to get rolling in March?
Well, I mean, if I was ESPN percentile ranking, I would say there's about a 41.7% that the old St. Mary's Gales, the Gale Storm, are going to get it done. I actually do think that they have a good chance at that because of what you said, the three in a row. And I give them about a 42 point. What did I say, 41 or 42? God, I got to go back in the computer and redo it.
You said 41.7.
41.7. So I give them a 41.7. So that's a pretty healthy chance, I'd say. So, yeah, I think that could be it. Now, if they hadn't lost yet, I would have bumped it up to about 47.3 if they hadn't lost a week back. Gonzaga. Had they not lost, but now I think that they're on, you know, they got their antennas up, you know, and they're like, everybody's on the radar now.
I'm honestly cracking up because for those of you that don't know, who have not listened to our college football show, it always drives Chris bleeping F-word nuts that they always do like there's a 53.9% chance that Auburn might beat Georgia. And Chris's take is, where do they find the point freaking nine? Or where does the point three come
percentage
from?
Percentage is bad enough.
If you're new to the show,
bad enough. But when you're going to do the point shit, now come on.
if you're new to the show, when you're like, man, what the hell's up with this Chris guy? 41.7. The point seven is like a middle finger to the ESPN sabermetric world. That's not Chris trying to get fancy.
I am now an ESPN percentile computer. I will only speak in .9 terms.
Or we had a football game a couple years ago. I think it was Alabama, Georgia, and it's like Auburn has a 50.3% chance of winning. Well, for Christ's sake, why can't we just call it a push? You know, I mean, come on.
Right.
But the point is Chris taking a shot at someone, and it just makes me laugh. The inside jokes he built up over time and the Lane Kiffin quota, I'm sure many of our listeners are tired of that, but, you know, Florida
but
Atlanta,
tell me that was
here, let's
slick.
Go.
Tell me that wasn't slick how he just got his quota in, though. That was pretty slick, dude. That was impressive.
Let me ask you one question, then we'll walk out the door. If the Zags lose tonight, does that cost them a one seed in your opinion?
I'll walk out this freaking door. I swear to God, I'll walk out. No, what's after? Go ahead.
If the Zags lose tonight, brother, does that cost them a one seed?
Yeah, I do. I kind of feel like, oh boy.
Because right now, if they win, they're an automatic one, in my opinion, no matter what. I know they did lose a game, and their conference wasn't the strongest, but I don't think if they win tonight that you cannot give them a one. I could be wrong, but I'd say the Baylor
and like Florida State Louisville mixture in there. I guess if Louisville won it all by beating North Carolina, they may be able to jump up there. But if you flash back even a couple weeks ago or a 10 days ago, but especially like a month ago, you had those other clubs like Baylor and Louisville, and you had those other clubs that were lingering where you go, you could take two out of the ACC and make them a one seed. We've seen that from time to time. But right now, I think Baylor or Louisville, I guess Florida State too, would have to win it all to bump in there with that loss as well. Because you're right, There's really, if they win it, they should be in there because no one really jumped over them, you know, like you'd assume.
And, God, I mean, I don't think Carolina will lose, but, if Carolina, as long as they win their first game, I think Carolina's got to win on Thursday, and I think they're kind of locked for a 1-2. It is kind of just a weird year, and I'll finish the show with this, but, again, I don't think the bubble's quite as tight as normal. But on the other hand, to have a more matterful point for the tournament, is we legit have, like, 10 teams that could cut down the net that you can make an argument for. I mean, obviously, Kansas has had a phenomenal year, and I'd say the best resume, but this should be a very fun tournament. When we were simply looking at Wisconsin, Florida State, and you mentioned your Gophers and Syracuse, like, this first week, I know the first weekend is always the best, but I think it has potential to be even better because we truly have had a great year of parity, but with parity, it's also been a competitive year of parity. So I think we're setting ourselves up for what should be a very, very fun upcoming March. Clearly, we still have a ways to go, though, because as we take our things for granted, and I do especially as a Carolina fan, like I mentioned, there are still schools playing their hearts out. So you maybe don't know, of Jacksonville State playing Southern, but, you know, that's not a team's home court. These are teams that don't get a free pass if they blow up in their conference tournament. They're doing all they can to win. And it is kind of fun because it's hard, Chris, to take in about when you watch Selection Sunday and they make the brackets, and then you have to sit down with your notebook and like, all right, who's my sleeper pick? And then, you know, Seth Davis and all those guys are like, well, this school's got a kid that can drop 40 a game. And you're like, oh, I got to pick them. Or this school's got a kid that can do, you know. So you truly do get to see a lot of great players that are in these small schools. And it's just they'll never get the media coverage that Lonzo Ball does. So all in all, basically what I'm saying is this is the best time of year to watch college basketball. You get games basically from now on for almost a full month straight besides a couple of days off to rest. And we're setting up for a very, they are. And it's just awesome. I remember I've been in Vegas the last couple of years along with my trip. I'm not doing Vegas this year, but this is just, if you're a college basketball fan, even if you're not, get all the TVs you got in, put them in the same room, have your friends over, have a couple of drinks, and just kick your feet back and relax. Because you're going to get buzzer beaters, you're going to get the great games, and you're going to get those Cinderella stories. Remember last year, you had the coach who had a broken foot, so he was, like, scooting around on his, like, one-legged scooter and, like, fell off. I mean, it's stuff you can't make up.
Yeah, that was awesome, dude. He was so into the game, man. He was so into the game.
He fell out of his chair. I mean, those are stories where you're like, dude, that will be on the One Shining Moment March Madness video. Now, clearly I did not watch the One Shining Moment video last year to wrap up the tournament because I was massively heartburned.
Did you have cable problems or something? That's our show. Why did you pay attention to the end of the – I wonder why.
Can we get someone in the chat to help us out?
Maybe we can get a caller because I want to know this. I'm trying to Google it right now. I got to go out for dinner. Too pumped up.
I'm losing you. The signal's going really bad even though it's been good all year. I think people can tie that together if they're listeners of our show. So, as always, stay safe and healthy. Enjoy the basketball this week. Chris and I think we're going to actually have dinner together on Monday. We will break down our brackets. I'm sure we'll both screw up some picks, but, hey, it's fun. And we will do a show either next Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday. I'll be probably in sunny Orlando, hopefully taking in the sun and getting ready to watch – maybe even Wisconsin play in person, or maybe boo Duke. I would love to see Duke in person and trash them, but I'll probably get that lucky. But anyways, stay safe, stay healthy. Thanks for the listeners. We love it. And we'll be back next week talking brackets. I can't wait. Have a good night. Peace.